thank everyone. I'm going to call the January 2012 meeting of the Model Ordinance Advisory Council's order. Happy New Year to everyone. Thanks for coming out on this very cold night. And special welcome to our new members. We're glad to have you here. Through this meeting, we'll try to orient you to review our procedures. And if you have any questions during the meeting, please feel free to ask. First order of business is public comment, and I don't believe there's anyone signed up for public comment. Okay. So we'll go to a little round robin instead of public comment to introduce ourselves to one another. So if you just say your name, where you're from, and what you do during the day or night, and it'll just be a brief introduction so you guys can know names and records. I'll begin by saying I'm Frank DiBernardo, and I'm from Greenbelt, Maryland, Prince George's County. And I, during the day, I serve as the executive director of New Ways Ministry, which is a Catholic organization that works for lesbian and gay equality. I ride the Green Line and buses in Prince George's County.
My name is Chris Farrell. I'm the outgoing vice chair for Maryland. I live in the Head Mill subdivision of Wheaton. I ride most days Red Line to Green Line to Yellow Line to get to Braddock Road Station. My day job, I'm a lobbyist for an organization that has lots of members, especially around this area, the National Retired and Retired Federal Employees Association. I ride buses, as I did this morning. The ride on buses somewhat. A couple of the metro buses and a little bit of gas bus service, especially in cold weather. Thank you.
My name is Pat Sheehan. My name is Matt Sheehan. I am chair of the Accessibility Advisory Committee, which is sort of the sister committee to this committee. The committee I chair deals with disability issues, particularly metro access, fit through system, bus and rail, making sure people with disabilities can use the system effectively. There's a lot of correlation between what my committee does, Accessibility Advisory Committee, and what this committee does. And so I serve on this committee as an at-large member, advising this committee on disability issues and then giving them a little bit of information on the projects that we're doing so that when we go to the board, that we have a coordinated voice as far as bus and rail and fixed systems and network access. During the day, I work at the Department of Veterans Affairs as an IT specialist, and I use the fixed-route system primarily and also metro access.
My name is Steve Palma. I've been around for about a year now. I live in Fairfax County, particularly Springfield. During the day, I work as a political consultant for candidates and nonprofits. Ride buses and rail, pretty much most of the time, because the metro is the quality service is so bad, right? And it's frustrating to use it.
I'm Ben Ball, and I live in Columbia Heights. During the day, I'm a senior policy advisor at the Department of Homeland Security, where I work primarily on immigration issues. I ride primarily the H2-4 buses, but also quite a bit of metro rail and other buses that we measure.
I'm Ron Harding, I represent Montgomery County on the RAC, and I've been on the RAC for 2 years now. I run the red line from either Grosvenor or the White Line ever since the subway opened, while I was working, I literally rode it every day. And I just recently retired from the Department of Labor as a county supervisor.
I'm just Ryan Waldo, representing Montgomery County, and I mainly ride the red line, and I am a librarian at NIH.
Good evening, I'm Lori Silva, I represent Grosvenor County, and I am dependent on public transit. So I ride metro bus, metro rail, I ride cars, I ride everything right on and very happy, so. I am currently employed at the building, so if you may ask.
I'm Carol Carter-Warner, and I'm a representative from the District of Columbia. I think I'm serving my fourth year on the Ride Advisory Council. I'm a native of Washington. I live in Ward 5, really on the Ward floor, Ward 5 border. I'm a constant user of public transit. I don't own a car by choice. I use metro rail, metro bus, zip car, and occasional taxis. I am very committed to the issues of governance, and I believe in following the money, so that's one reason why I am not only serving this council, but also as president of my tenant association and on various administrative positions in my congregation and denomination.
Hello, my name is Darwin Gordon, I'm an at-large member, but I live in Arlington County. I ride primarily yellow and red lines, as well as metro bus to get to my nearest metro station. But I also ride other lines off page, as well as the art buses, like my fellow Arlington County member. I'm starting my second term on the RAC, so like Carol, I want to see you there. This is the beginning of my fourth year, and my day job is on transportation industry analyst for the U.S. Department of Transportation, where I provide technical oversight to grant programs in Asia.
Good evening. My name is James Wright. I'm a new member of RAC. I live in Prince George's County, specifically in Sea Crescent, the Inner Beltway community. I do not own a car. I am also a zip car. And I ride the buses primarily, but also metro rail. And it happens to be part of this council because it's very important to understand that people in the Inner Beltway community, usually metro is the transportation mode for them. And I think it's important for people to understand that, and I hope to articulate that during my time on council.
Hello, my name is Paul Garrigan. This is my first time here, so I'm taking my first term. I represent Arlington County, and actually made a run in just recently moved back to the area. And I also do not own a car by choice. And I do use every line because I have in and out of DCE around in Virginia. I also use the art bus. And which the public class may be on the weekend and on it, when we feel really beautiful, when you have to work at the holiday. And I'm glad to be here and be a voice of
Good evening, my name is Kelsey Rockmore. I live in Ward 7 in Washington, D.C. I primarily ride the bus, although I also ride the train from time to time, and that would be the blue, the orange line, the green line. The bus, because I live in the city, I pretty much take every bus I can. No one is as far as what I do during the day, I am a policy specialist for the Congressional Research Service. I think many of you that
do know me, maybe they're getting to know me as we work together over the next year on the RAC, is that I like to speak up a lot or make sure I voice the needs of those citizens that live in Ward 7 and Ward 8 in the outlying areas of the district, because they are, like someone mentioned earlier, like some of the inner suburbs of the Beltway, very metro-dependent areas, people there really depend on metro, and I like to make sure that they have a voice, that there's their rights as well as those folks that can afford to take the train every day.
Hello, I'm Nicole Brown, I'm new to the RAC, I live in Ward 8, presumably Congress Heights, and guilty of my thunder, but I joined basically to be a voice for Ward 8. I think there's a lot of problems and issues that need to be resolved, and I'd like to be an advocate for those individuals. What I do the day, I'm a banker, specifically in operations, so I handle all the back office business. And fun fact, I'm a mother of four, three boys and a girl. So that's what I have there.
Hi, I'm Jude Alpers. I'm the current outgoing DC Vice Chair of the Rise Advisory Council. I live in D.C. in the Newmont Circle neighborhood, and I primarily ride the Red Line. I work most of a fair amount of time in Roslyn, so I also take the Orange and Blue Lines, circular bus, bicycle, walk, metro buses, and so forth, fairly regularly. I also, one of the few people whose data pertains directly to transportation and the issues they brought to some of the things that we do on RAC. I run a blog called Greater Greater Washington, greatergreaterwashington.org, about transportation and urban development issues in the DC metropolitan area.
Well, this is our guest, Mrs. Hudgens, I will introduce her later. So we have another person with us on speakerphone tonight, Paul Seid, who's currently in Washington State on board. So Paul, you're up.
Thanks, Frank. My name is Paul Seid. I came out of Iraq in the January 2000.
A little louder, Paul.
I commute on bus in the Red Line, most primarily. I'm in Washington State on business right now. I work for the United States Senate, so I'm on the ground in Seattle during free time. But I appreciate it. I look forward to meeting everyone in person the next meeting.
Thanks, Paul. Joseph?
My name is Joseph. I represent Prince George's County. This is my second year on the RAC, in my first term. Not that it's a real thing, but my day job is I'm an assistant principal at a middle school in Southeast DC in Ward 8. I normally commute on other Chaplin by the train to work. Today I have to drove here, which is the reason why you should not drive here, which is what I'm saying. I'm running to the train, we want to try, and I'm going to be riding our train to that normally.
Thank you, Walter. Two little housekeeping things. One, to prevent feedback when people are speaking, it's good if everybody who is not speaking shuts their microphone on the floor. And also, I've been told by the technicians that sometimes electronic equipment next to the microphone, including other microphones, often cause feedback too. So sometimes if you just spread or microphone further from the one. Okay. Next item on the agenda is approval of the agenda. We'll consider approval unless anyone has objections. seeing none, will consider it approved. And approval of the past meeting minutes from December, which you have in your packet.
Can I just ask if hopefully it'll be possible, John, to get November and January next month so we can get back on track really?
Yes.
I know it's busy at the end of the year with applications and a lot of other things, but I obviously, you know, great that for us, I think it's a service for all of the people that aren't on their Act 2 power minutes.
Yes.
Seeing no other objections, we'll consider the minutes approved. Next item, for new members, we always have, usually have a presentation at our Act meeting from someone from Metro, and it's very, very delighted to have the chair of the Metro Board with us, Mrs. Catherine Hutchins. Mrs. Hutchins was appointed to the Metro Board in January 2004, and represents Fairfax County. Since last January, she served as the chair, and since 1999, she has served on the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors when she was elected to that position. She's currently serving her third term. Mrs. Hutchins has a very distinguished record of service. Just want to mention the items that deal with transportation. She is a member of the Transportation Planning Board. She has served as the chairman of the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission and as a member of the Northern Virginia Regional Commission. She's also served on the Council of Governments Access for All Committee. It's a good thing, I think, to start the new year off by having our board here with us. Again, for the benefit of the new members, we'll such as we'll discuss a public presentation, and then we'll go around the table if you have any questions or comments for that way. Yeah, we'll get on to that.
Thank you. Thank you. Good evening, and thank you for having me today. I think this is my annual. I was here about a year ago, and I enjoy the opportunity to share and hear from you regarding issues that are important and concern. And I'll take a moment and do a brief introduction myself. I'm from Fairfax County, and I represent what we call the Humphrey District of 9, District 5, and that represents the, I call it the supervisor of Dallas Air Force Staff, and it includes a large community of that community in Western Texas, Northern and Development. Most important thing to us, Metro right now, to me, it's in the heart of what I did, is the extension of the Civil Line to Green Avenue Phase 1 and Green Avenue Station, that goes on to Dallas and into Loudoun County. And the latter parts of the 25th came this past week on Saturday and tomorrow. It's difficult. But I also have traveled, most of my travel in around the region is by the bus and rail. I drive a lot of people in the car very much so, but I enter the metro system through the Metro Service, the Fairfax County Bus Service, and use the Orange Line, the red line here, visit the Stewart County, D.C., by metro. I always tell people it is the best alternative for us to be in the metro system. Tonight I go to the park by the East Officer. So it's a very important service. Tonight I'll just go through a couple of items that have changed out this board since I was here last, and things that I think will be of interest to the coming year that both the board and the authority will have interesting concerns about. A few of the new members, it's important to recall that our board, the Nevada board has gone through a significant change of membership in terms of our representation. We are applying from our local jurisdictions for our jurisdictions, not relevant district of Columbia and Virginia and the federal government. And during the past year, our borough delegation has changed completely. Our federal delegation has shifted from an alternate member of federalism to primary voting principle. And district of Columbia has also changed with the exception of parliamentary members, Mr. Townsend. And Virginia will change this year, next meeting. Our Virginia members are parliamentary. And Alexandria, myself, and for us this year, the Commonwealth will have some medical order. And so it's been a lot of change. And that change has been, I think, very beneficial in some terms of us, because we have done a lot of hard work, all of our work has been done. And with the change in membership, we have also done some changes in procedures and policy, and that has been probably a great deal of work that's been done. First, my focus on the governance, and over the past several years, Metro has been managed through a set of procedures, in addition to the compact that we've done by. And in the past year, we've done a set of bylaws and adopted the procedures. We have as a committee of the whole during the entire year, with the focus being that we have a fairly new board and rather than our committees and other issues dealing with board matters in smaller committees and with varying members of membership committees we have as a committee of the whole. As we move into this year, we're probably be more and more with the board and the structure. That's a little bit more reflective of the work that we need to do. And that will be provided when we have elections, either this one, with the construction of our committees. Some of the work that's been done in the governance committee has been most important in terms of us allowing a vision. Right now, the board is poised from this governance standpoint to go out to our stakeholders to get input on the work we've done, vision and vision of for the board. And we have begun a strategic planning piece, in which we, over the next several months, we develop our goals. And this year, as we have the budget for the 2013 budget, we anticipate we'll be more closely aligning our budget between 2013 and 2014. And aligning those with strategic goals of the board. I think one of the other things to talk about here is the amount of, not only the amount of work that's been done with that particular board, but within the county. It was one of the years for the service serving as the new general manager, CEO. And during this year, there's been a tremendous amount of work that's been done under his leadership for the new members of the service, hired by the board, I think it was March, maybe, no, June, July, September. Yeah. We hired him as a member, and the anticipation is went out for a full general manager that he would probably serve as interim. He was there to keep us moving forward. And as we went through the search, we actually decided to hire Mr. Searles. And Mr. Searles has been a significantly focused general manager for the needs of Metro. Sarah Goodman here has been the major part there. Safety, I think customer focus and trying to make sure we communicate with our stakeholders, communicating with our customers. And I think making the greater part of the oversight budget in terms of moving into a multi-year budget and moving into a capital budget that supports the stability of the area that is very significant for us. This year, as we announced the 2013 budget, we will be moving into a 2014 budget. A capital program that will have completed some of the most significant dollars that we put into the capital program. And the focus there is to make sure that the staff has support for the kind of repairs and maintenance that must exist in the metro system as we change. And most important, safety. We had significant requirements of safety that were part of the National Transportation Safety Board, but also just the knowledge of the aging system and the safety issues that were there. Moving into a lot of that change there. So those are really what we put, I think, the board's recognized as sort of critical actions that are taking place in the authority. This coming up on the 12th, the Board's Finance Committee, and we will be hearing from Mr. Searles on the 2013 budget. And we're looking forward to the opportunity to hear what this budget is about, take the budget to the public, hear back from our stakeholders and customers on that budget, and define what we think is most important for us. Last year we were under, I think we're a fortunate environment in which we found ourselves not raising stairs and not reducing service. But we also know we haven't had a very good year to start that nature. So I'm going to be able to keep that type of situation going. I think there will be a lot of activity that will go on within the authority in terms of changes. With the budget, we will be able to study about the policies. I think you have participated in some of the public discussions about the policy. We will also hear about later in the year issues regarding looking at nuclear operations commission as the leader of the farm. So there are a lot of things that I think are going on in that show. To the point of trying to make sure that we are delivering the quality service and the litigation to customers to make sure we can maintain quality. And that's a very difficult thing to do. It's a very difficult thing to do.
Is a love-hate relationship.
Most of my friends are transit advocates. They're pleased to have a way to get to work and other events without using cars, but a lot of them have that alternative, and every hit the system takes, it brings the aid on and that love-hate relationship. So is there a possibility that either the general manager or directed by the board could train willing regular riders to be better prepared for what may happen occasionally in a maturing system?
I thank you for that question, because it is one of that fact that we address some of that at one of our police and safety meetings. There is, and I'll go back and turn my step, but there is I think it's certainly natural that it is certainly a citizen's emergency response, as we have in our region, in our localities. And I am familiar with the fact that there are people that are trained to go through emergency response exercises, learn the insides of the tunnel, how to maneuver through the tunnel, how to work with other people as they are part of an emergency experience. But you do raise a question as to the extent, and also the communications out there. Because too often they are being difficult to know if they can help and can they be expanded to the larger piece. I also was not seeking a lot of ABs, because it is a difficult piece. As I've been on project training, I come from the Marshall Island. I did not have the experience of the top piece, but I had the experience of being in the top, thinking about having the experience of the top piece. And I really enjoy my system, but it is difficult. It is difficult in many, many ways, and so I think your question is very important, and I would like to go back and make sure that staff and the board have information exactly that. First and foremost, exactly what it is, to the extent as was described, was that safety. I remember she stated there were reference to the fact that there is a citizen group, but to what extent that citizen group is very much engaged. Also, the fact was whether or not it's engaged in the Columbia Citizens Group, Columbia Arizona Service Group, and in the other jurisdictions. I only know of it in Fairfax County because I actually have that person's back, so the person she did go through the mentor training. And so maybe the discussion needs to be how we better coordinate that program to expand that use, because anytime anyone is knowledgeable of it, we have the system for the benefit to us all.
Thank you. This is Pat Sheehan. A couple of things from the Accessibility Advisory Committee. We want to be coming before the board hopefully this month with some recommendations concerning the fares that we have developed, sort of in conjunction with some of the plans that you're moving forward, looking at the fares for metro access and how they can be simplified or made fairer. We've had a working group putting a proposal together, which was for our committee last month, which I think we're looking forward to sharing with you. The other piece of information that I also wanted to share was that with respect to the new metro access contract that will be finished up in, I guess, the summer of 2013 and awarded at that time. Or it was implemented at that time. We've had public meetings, town hall meetings, and gotten a lot of good information from focus groups. Interestingly enough, we're not only using that information to make sure that it reflects an efficient system for the disability community with the way that our RFP will be put out,
but we're also using the information and communicating it back to the current provider, so that the current provider realizes that they need to make, according to the public comment, gains in these areas like dispatch and service, and a little bit of scheduling and that sort of thing. So it's been very much a win-win situation. The ability of a group, whether it's, let's say, the RAC or whether it's the AAC, to hold the town meetings and then take those results and put them back into the system to make it work, we found it very, very useful. And a lot of cooperation from Christian Kent's office, lots of ADAP programs, and we appreciate that. And we look forward to working with you. Myself to the RAC and with the AAC, we appreciate your support.
Thank you. And I'm glad to hear the public input piece that has been taking place, because I think that's very critical. If we go back to the early days of the contract, the challenges we had, it was the input that we had, unfortunately, after the call of the month, and while improvements have been made, we know that we have had some very good findings. And I think that's incredible to us in terms of coming up with a contract that serves the disability community well, and I think serves the metro well in terms of quality.
Another question.
A question about the proposal budget for the next year. The sort of crux of my question is: is it a fair increase in the bill? Is it a fair compromise? I think we, from what I've read of what's been going on here at the council, from what I've heard already from people, Siemens, there's a lot of concern about equity, about where the burden of the shortfall will fall. And it seems to me like putting all of that shortfall on the providers isn't necessarily taking into account necessarily who benefits from the ecosystem. There are a lot of car drivers out there who benefit from the metro rail system, because there are people who are riding the metro rail system, or various other options, who would be driving cars otherwise. And so the fare increase solely on the people who just use the system rather than those who are active in sort of passive in the system would be inherently to create some sort of inequality. So I'm wondering how we want to use that.
Well, you know, first of all, your question is there going to be something? I would say I can't answer that because I really haven't seen the budget. The budget truly comes out next week. And we had a lot of discussion. It's been a good discussion. And the interesting part about the budget this time is that there has been a process of trying to put in place high-cost structure pieces that can support the budget, and particularly multi-year budget. The fare increase sort of comes into play because at one point we decided that we would try an index. So that we can have some understanding of what is the cost that we have to deal with, what is the fare that the customers have to deal with. And this is because we've not raised fares for decades. And so we've made a big change. I know that there has been some ways, because when we looked at both the delta of the cost of the budget, general manager started out and said, why don't we say, what portion of subsidy will come from the fares? And we had a long discussion about that, because the question is it fair to simply allocate those portions to drivers? And I think that's probably how this budget discussion is going to go when it comes out. Here's what I find the difficulty right now. First of all, we recognize that there's nothing. I think we should look at the fair portion, not simply saying it's your 50-50 on this, because frankly, we're here to subsidize the system, and that's why it's called subsidy. that we don't have to have people asking contribution in favor. One of the things that I think we need to look at is when we did the last fare increase, and we do have those numbers, how does that fare increase impact the riders, both bus and rail? One of the things we want to do is encourage more bus use, but we all know that many large numbers are on this system anymore, as we have more and more people making these bus, large numbers of people who use bus, the ones that we stop So, this is your answer to your question, is no, it's not, but I think it is a discussion of how we get to a quality level and how we in the jurisdictions participate in that discussion in order to have those who come to the table with us as employers understand what the burden or what the share that we should be paying. There is a portion of fare that is illegal, but at some point we may not have resources. I think it should be a real policy piece of what should be the maximum for the ethnic staff in order to have rail system. Now, I believe that there's a pricing piece that's always there, and the pricing piece is also always there in the business system. But I hear from people who use bus and rail travel long distances. And when you add that up, and I give you an example, if you're traveling from Hyattsville all the way to Central Richmond, or Columbia, or whatever you mean, that's pretty happy fare. And what we don't want to do is bring people off the rail system. And that's the real challenge. And so, we're going out to the public. I'm going to close on the meeting. I suspect that they have some portion of the paper question is not the policy.
Yeah, one thing I've learned in the 2 years I've been on the committee is just how difficult and complicated that budget situation is. And the fact that you have no tax basis of any kind, and you're constantly waiting from so many jurisdictions, it's just amazing. I find the budget issue is very difficult, and I wish you well on those. But the issue I wanted to raise doesn't really implicate the budget, and it's really a follow-up to what Chris Carroll said. That is, one of my big concerns, I'm sure they're not going to write it, but I just read mine all the time, is every time I've been in a situation where there's a major breakdown or some kind of crisis, there's no direction we can give. People don't close the stations, people just keep coming into the stations, even on the platforms are totally crowded. Nobody seems to take leadership. And what I think is not a big budget item would be to have a much better trained of your personnel. I understand Chris is suggestions is probably a good one. The more people you have to help to begin the situation. But my experience has been, as soon as a problem like that happens, nobody seems to be in charge. Nobody seems to know exactly what should be done. Nobody tells people what to do. And the TV reports that I saw in a recent breakdown of the protocol, that's exactly what all the people were saying. Nobody told us what happened, nobody told us what to do, we were just there for a long period of time. And again, I guess my question is there training going on with the kind of personnel as to what do you do in a crisis or a breakdown? I just don't see it when I have one of those situations myself.
That's a difficult question that you asked, because you asked in our discussion. Yes, there is training. Yes, the personnel is prepared. And in the tunnel is in the way in the back for investigation on everything and how it transpired. Is that a question to ask? But there does seem to be, and I think it's very important because we do have, I call it a fragile system, because there are things that happen to it all the time. And so when there is a real different accident or incident, you expect a different kind of response. And I think that maybe what you're seeing is how we have a response that shows that there's actually a plan and training that everybody is, as employees, responding to, and that's what the customers would see. And as, I just like to have to take this back and say, get that as a general understanding of why we said some of the questions that we keep asking. And I know that we have general manager and chief safety officer believes that they're doing that, and they're putting a lot of people in place to do it. While they may not be completed at this time, are there other things that we do? We talked about this in terms of safety and control. I raised a question that every town has a large number of volunteer public safety people. Some are former, but some are simply citizen members, and they are trained by the county, they're insured by the county, and they serve as that resource. So they have the other piece. I think there's some portions of this in Metro, and the question is that what we see, because what we really need is a large number of personnel. Well, I should put it first. First and foremost, you need to have a plan of how you respond to the incident, and who's in charge, and can the public see who's in charge. I think it's most important to know who's in charge, so you get a better sense of your safety when you get on that, and maybe a better way of identifying that and acknowledging that. Are there any other resources such as that? Sure. I don't
know. I have a number of things that I've been doing. We just do one, and I'm looking at the time. And that focuses more on Chris's original question about the relationship between Metro. And I'm just going to be blunt and say, I think it's because Metro does not actively seek citizen input in what they do. They just do it and then respond later and absorb those. And so, and I think, one thing one avenue that we had, one of the guys who was in charge of the long range planning when it came to shutting down these metro stations. And a lot of people, especially in the East Market, were very concerned about closing the East Market metro station on a holiday weekend when there's a big event over there. Basically, his response here was, I don't care. It's about safety first. Well, we do care, and this is our system. And so I asked the question before about how, what type of outreach does it does. We have different types of outreach. But when I look at outreach, outreach is not the communication of people. That's not outreach. Outreach is people who are in the community themselves and how they're actually attending civic association meetings, AMC meetings, municipal meetings, just meetings in general. We're hearing about how Metro affects people. Because when we talk to people who ride Metro, we always view ourselves as customers of Metro. Because not only do we pay the guy, we have to offer the base for it too. So we view ourselves as shareholders of Metro. And so my hope is that going into this year, that's something that you all will take into account, especially when you're talking about the potential repairs at least at a time when a lot of people stuff are down, is how you actively engage people and bring people into what Metro does every day and involve them at the forefront and bring them into the decision at the beginning as opposed to responding to their anger later.
I would leave this by saying that I think as figures, one of the things that we have done in other years and have done partly here, and I think I'd like to ask feedback on the town hall meeting, but not town hall meeting, it's just around a piece of issue we're on the way to you. How do we get our communities further to the drivers? We do a lot of outreach, and the question is, are we not reaching the right people, and are we utilizing the right or to reach who we think is the population that's affected by it. And that's the goal. I've been here on the RAC tour of the year 2009, and since I got here, we have been talking about doing communications, and the fact of the matter was that this last incident proved that nothing has been done. Well, most of the time that I'm stuck in Metro, and you know, speakers come in and say X or Y, most of the time nobody understands. The speakers are bad, or even the equipment, or the people that approach it, they don't have, they're not trained, or they are too close to that. I don't know. The bottom line is that the people don't understand whatever it is that, you know, Metro is trying to inform us about. And that is a big concern, because then they say, oh yes, we're improving the Metro, now we have, we're on Facebook. Well, you know, if you're stuck in the Metro or in the tunnel, I'm not looking at Facebook. Okay? So that is my biggest concern. The people that were stuck in there for 3 hours and had no idea, and somebody communicated, oh, we have very increasing difficulties after an hour of being stuck in training. That is quite unacceptable. And every time I come here, they said there's some kind of presentation and like improvements of communication. The bottom line is that it seems that, I don't know, they're going too technical and forgetting about the everyday communication that we need.
Well, I just respond at a different point in time, because as I said, I use the system, and I agree with you that there are still situations in which you would think there was no communication going on. And I've been on that. I have to tell you that I have seen improvement, and Metro is a very large system, and that is one of the biggest challenges that is being faced. And Mr. Charles says about safety, you know, some of them like that went on in terms of how to maintain the system safe, how to get back to what is the optimum that we want to be in. But I think it is another piece in terms of how do we get more voices in order to help people understand what level of communication needs to be. But there still is a strength in which you will not yourself. The audibility is not going to occur. Unfortunately, that's just a fact of the matter. And I will tell you, I'm really still going to move you out and teach you anything. But I have been. Some of them, I have been in the mix of them. There was a comment that we saw often saying, this is what our army's problem situation is. This was the last time it was really, really major. And I think what it says is, if I want to be part of the system when something really serious happens, I really want to feel like I'm going to be safe, and I'm going to know what's going on. And so I think that this really balances it out. Because if this one was simply the inability to keep moving, but there was nothing really happening necessarily, that they don't want this, and that wasn't so but for me to have that secure feeling that it's happening on a regular basis to work with that. So, I want to go back to understanding, you know, what this is communications, what communications. I've always seen that I think the Metro resume and improvements, and what really has struck me is that I've actually seen the general manager on the Metro. I've actually seen the chief of the table on the Metro as compared to 2009 when I went to a town hall meeting in the Metro top staff pulled up in SUVs. So, there's definitely an improvement. But I think that sort of going tagging on to the love-hate relationship and also the issue of equity, what does equity mean? Equity is sort of in the eye of the beholder. We sort of throw that term around, we are using it in different ways. What I'm concerned about are the people
don't tweet, don't have smartphones, don't use Facebook, don't have the kind of job where they have the luxury of going to their office and spending 15 to 20 minutes at their computers using, you know, complaining to Metro. It's the ordinary, everyday person. When we went around the table, I was struck by the fact that several of us said we don't have cars by choice. But for some people who don't have any other option, those are the people that I think they're not doing a good job of representing. And one suggestion I would make is go to where the people are. Go to churches, mosques, synagogues, and talk to people where they're elected and being for another reason. And I think your idea of having town halls or public meetings other than when they're undergoing some major shift like price increase or, you know, fare structure changes would be a good step in that direction as long as they were held at times and places where people can get to.
Thank you. Just a point of clarification on the inflation and increases in gas that is every 2 years, and it's on an adjusted CPI and transportation. excuse me, I actually pushed that issue when Chris Zimmerman was on the board with them again. I think it solved part of the problem because now the deficit doesn't appear as big as it would be. But the other half is there's no assumption of what rate subsidies will increase. And there's a lot of debate over that. I think having some reasonable assumption on subsidy increasing by say the same rate as fares would maybe allow the board to focus on larger issues and not issues of will the subsidy obviously increase by inflation, for example. So that's just my suggestion. I don't have a response because it's a very complex issue. But my actual question to you is, in the fiscal climate that we're doing at the federal level, just like there was a threat that became real at the transit subsidy level to be cut at the loss, there's a real threat due to the Budget Control Act of 2011 that there will be sequestration at the beginning of next year, which would be midway through the fiscal year, given your federal capital support. Now, luckily for Metro, just like with the fares, you know, we read that it's not the impact on the base rate of the subsidy being lost because it's halfway through the year and it will take time to adjust. You generally spend a lot of your capital dollars that were actually appropriated in the previous year. But a cut of that magnitude would have major impacts on the capital program. My only advice to you is please keep writers informed. And Rich Charles has done a great job of that, but it has to be reiterated. So, you know, if there's a cut in federal funding and state and local governments cut their match by the same amount of federal cut, that will have a major effect. And there may not be a light at the end of the tunnel because we're entering a phase of federal budgeting where everything has to be paid for, so there's nothing that comes free. And just let the writers know, if Charles' priority is safety, and he's not going to sacrifice safety, it means the system gets slower, it means the system gets less reliable, but it remains safe. And I know the marketing people will cringe, but I'd rather have Metro tell people the truth than let it go downhill and then have to explain why things went downhill, because they never told people, well, we have all these escalators, and maybe they're obsolete, and some of them have manufacturers who don't afford them anymore, and we didn't have the money to replace them. That's why we have an escalator problem. We've heard that after all the escalators failed. So that's my only comment to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief, considering the time. Ms. Hutchins, just a quick comment. The people in Annapolis, our leaders in Annapolis, are crying poor in Maryland. It looks like D.C. may have a $42 million surplus, and we don't know. And I don't know what's going on with Richmond, but will Metro please look at creative financing options instead of just being made a point of just a knee-jerk fare increase? Because in the past, it seems that the Metro board says, oh, we have a shortfall, let's increase fares. You know, look into creative financing. And I'm a progressive and I'm a liberal, but I believe in saying, look at public-private partnerships in terms of
train stations, et cetera. I don't know about that. I'm not an expert, but please look into creative finances instead of just a knee-jerk failure.
I appreciate the references that you said, because it really is extremely difficult for mental students to talk about the federal picture. But Compact, as if the structure of all of the remaining other compacts is not adequate. And no one accepts the full responsibility that is valid for this surrounding university. And so, the members of the class that they were going to say, we're better off, and the district said, well, we're even poorer. And that's every year is a different one. I don't know if we will back into the form of any resource of revenue that comes to that. And that is what's needed. Something that gives you predictability to the noise and system. So it is one that we, I don't know how we did it, but it was a to do that. We just required all the kind of things that we just does not get to do it for two people. It is. We just can't have a system to the cost of that as to their wrongs and come.
Hello, this is a great, although I have a lot of things to say, I will not say all of them. I have some matters to me, I'm sure there's plenty of opportunities for me to call me. But what I would like to just speak on is I work a lot of customer service jobs, hourly paid jobs, so I'm familiar with similar positions when you're working with the public. And from what I see, it's a lot, that a lack of professionalism and efficiency. I know that I'm walking by a typical working metro employees, and I'm going to catch them pulling around in about 1 minute of their day, maybe they're not pulling around all their time, but it seems like I catch them of that minute a lot. And it kind of bugs me, because then I hear things on the news saying that there's overtime this, and metro workers are overworked, and I'm all for, treating employees well, but I also, like I said, work for hourly positions, and there was always someone there knowing when I was right about to go over and say, okay, you're done working for a week, someone else is going to pick up this shift. And I just see that there are so many budget problems. I'm surprised that efficiency is not there. I saw that it was $600,000 that Metro was going to pay a customer service group to be secret. Yeah. And I was like, I mean, all you have to do is go on Twitter and type in Metro, and you'll see all the customer feedback you want. That just kind of bugged me too. And I don't know if there's how many staff members are for Metro Station, but oftentimes I find there's no one there. And if you're going through the car, it's a speedy station manager, the station manager's not there. I'm abiding by the law, and I'm not going to jump over, but, what do I tell them to do? And it happens quite a bit. I don't know where they go. I don't know what they're doing. I was wondering if there's just one person that has a hierarchy, and when you're saying, who is there to give direction? Is there a main manager and then other people under? And when the Metro Police, are they paid by Metro? Sorry. But what I'm just saying is the employees as a whole, and I just want to see a lot of clustering, a lot of on the phone, a lot of ignoring stuff. I'm not saying it's their job to pick up trash because they're a station manager or their police or whatever it is, but you're at your job, and it's your job to be on the phone for the boss who's doing your job. Because the boss is paying your salary. I'm just getting that point, I'm not trying to downplay, but I'm staying home with it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Carol, and I did see in the business that you all may have an organization.
Yes.
Which I think is really helpful. We have an excellent organization for the park board, and we always have an organization for the one twenty four. We have a large participation, and what it is, highlighted, one has its properties throughout, but it also highlights where some things work well and some don't. You always go to the station manager, I'm in certain areas of passing, and some station managers, they take a look at it at home, and they are engaging public. And I actually want to station manager, and I would make a state of all those who decide which day. That is, you tell me, well, go to the point, the places, press the microphone, and I should have thought about that, but I didn't feel I was welcome by the time that he responded that way. So after he finished, I did come more along, and I told him, I really thought, as a customer, I think he was very friendly, and that being friendly and helpful is part of the job. And I didn't understand. And the reason, and I'm just highlighting that, because I think sometimes people don't think about the job all the time, and that is something that Mrs. Hall says, and that's why he writes, and I think he believes it, that's why everybody should be in system, because we are the eyes of the system. So, and we've talked about the, we have had that program and we had it under the form, and there is a need to have the kind of system that is unusual, that we have some kind of engaged structured program to see how the system joined for the very reasons that you say, and how we do it. What is possible is maybe under debate, but it does have a role to play in trying to make sure this is sufficiently one system that it has. But probably the organization will also want to do that.
So I have one main question, and then I'm going to make it make easier because a couple of variations of that question, and then wrap up to the time. So my first question is, what does the board need from RAC at this moment? Another variation of that question is, how can we best assist the board this year? What are three specific things that we can do for you? Is there something that you aren't getting from us? Is there anything else that we can think of beyond besides what we've done in the past? The reason I'm asking this question is because I'm going into my sixth year serving as the RAC, and there are times when I'm extremely frustrated, because there are times when I read the paper, especially about the Mystery Rider program, and I chuckle, because we discussed this here at the RAC about 3 or 4 years ago, and the RAC has put forth some really great recommendations, not anything lengthy, we're not talking about textbook size reports, just bullet size points that say, you know, this is what the RAC as a writer is going to have for my needs to handle first before they look at spending more money on a Mystery Rider program. Someone else earlier talked about communication. We've done that tons of times. We talk about communication. So I ask these questions because, for me, again, it's frustrating to serve sometimes on this council. There are times where I have made a lot of headway, especially about a lot of great festivals that are out there and that do want to see improvements made. But there are other times where I feel like folks come in here from WMATA, they make a presentation to us, and then whatever information we give them goes into a black box. So since we have you here, I would like to know, what do you want from us over this next year? What specific items, and you are going, and if we have a chance, you know, we'll try to take them on.
I think that's a very good question, or questions. I think that what the board does will, through the work itself, secure what you see as your own needs, but also to figure out is RAC able to coordinate with what is happening in that department through more than policy. For example, you say you provide priorities do you feel like the staff is not responding to the board?
Definitely. I'm sorry to interrupt for a minute, but every time we provide a thing, we can't even get an update on where this recommendation will. And I understand you have to take budgetary, you know, concerns and other operational concerns and play, but there are times where we're not going to believe the suggestions. Now we've got ten, we're absolutely nowhere. And it's like, well, why am I coming here only the first one day of each month? I don't see any progress in any of these suggestions that we, you know, that we put forth. I mean, even if we're going to get a reply back to say, this is why we're not going to take this, this is why we're not going to act on this, so this is good, but we're not going to talk to at this point. We're not getting the type of feedback.
Well, thank you. I would like to see if I can go back to the board points and see if we can do a better job of that. The reports from the lab. And I know we've had a very strong, I think we're trying to respond, but I think we can go back. And I'd be interested to see how we fall on priorities in order to make sure that this is getting responsive. But also to see when those responses are given, do they give you enough information to say that we're moving forward on a priority? Yes, or we're not going to move forward on a priority or recommendation. Because sometimes maybe that doesn't give the information in a way that you didn't even tell that the board is in it.